the third tutorials on Hyperion, and today we'll actually see the code that runs the jobs. Okay, and so today we'll move on to this part. And the examples I will be given will examples I'll use are included in Fermion 3D, and it's a GOY sigma epsilon code. Okay, and the libraries we'll be interacting with will depends on SDBB Haskell and Hyperion. SDBB Haskell is a Haskell interface talking to SDBB, and Hyperion is Haskell interface talking to Slurms and other cluster management. Okay, and right, so this is the file we'll be looking at. And so in this file, we'll see how to define the spectrum and other physical input, and decide our numerical details, and we'll actually see the programs that will be using different algorithms, including like denoid search and OPE search and so on. Yeah, and finally a few lines about how to set up the remote computations. Okay, so first, the majority of these files will depend on this function called bounce program. So bounce program takes a string, a text. And so this is the name of the program. And in when you tested the different repositories, the instruction tell you to hit a dot slash hip and then the name of the program. So every job you want to run, every computation you want to run, you define a function that looks like this with this name. And when you want to run it, you just go in back to your command line and type dot slash hip and the name. Okay, so this example is, well, it's called the test ngroup 2 mx6. So it's testing one point in the scaling dimension, and it's fixed at O(n)n equals to 2, and computed at mx6 or lambda equals to 11. So, okay, lambda equals 2 times mx minus 1. Is it? It's our conversion. And yeah, so then looking at the code, what comes first is how you set up your like the resources you want to set for this job. And so the syntax is the MPI job. You require the number of nodes you want and how many tasks you want to perform per node. And then you set the job time, which so like for this one, the job will be killed after 8 hours, even if it's not finished. And set slurm partitions, you can give a miss. There's a default setup, but this one just it's specific to what cluster you are using and which queue you want to use. And then map concurrently is just some functions allow us to compute different things at the same time. So here I want to test this point. But it's a single point included in a list. But if I have, say, several points I want to take, or I want to test, then map concurrently will create one job for each of the points. And so they will happen concurrently. OK, so that's like the basic remote job setup. And the actual computation we are doing here is specified by those two functions, and the little b bound functions is defined later after where keywords. And so, okay, so just to get rid of this bound remote compute, remote compute, it's a function defined in the Hyperion library. It takes some type called bound int b and returns the output wrapped in the cluster volnet. And here the bound int b, in our case, it's a conformal bootstrap problem. But if you want to see bootstrap some it's not necessarily a conformal bootstrap, but the additive bootstrap or like kind of bootstrap, other topic.
Modular bootstrap.
Thank you. Anyway, if you have something that's that you want to use to SDBB to compute the to compute things for you, then you just you need to follow the type informations and define your objects here using this bound type, and you can use the rest like the remote compute to do the computation. But here are attentions. Yeah, just mentioning it. This functions will actually call SDP to input and SDPB C++ program. So, but for you at the moment, you don't need to worry about what's happening in the background.
So this remote computer is something you can use to control cluster from your laptop.
No. It's just submitting your job to, like, it's a job performed remotely, meaning not on your login nodes. It's on the computation.
So this should be done on the login node.
Yeah. This you call this function in your login nodes, and the actual computations happen in computation nodes.
Yeah. So it automatically allocates. Remote computers doing all sorts of things like interfacing with Slurm and things in the background that you don't need to think about as a user.
Mm. I see.
Okay, and here just now this is the problem, like the way we specify this the problem for the test function. Sorry, it's a wrong name here, but it's almost this. I pasted the wrong function. Yeah. But it's almost the same. It's like you need to. There's a one. It's supposed to be for this one. It's supposed to be the GNY sigma psi epsilon feasible default gaps. We'll look at that function later on. But that defines the problems we want to look at. The rest are those are like the numerical details, like precisions and parameters that blocks ready takes, or scalar blocks takes, or SDBB takes. Okay. That's what I wanted to look at. Okay, let's first look at the one that enters the bound functions. That's the name of the function is called the feasible default gaps. And what it does is it takes the external dimensions, scaling dimension of external operators, and the your OPE coefficients, and which group, like which n you want to calculate. And the n max is derivative orders. And what it gives is this type is what we defined in the bound file. If you remember, like all those spectrums and spins, we specify the models. So that is almost the only type we use from the bound file, and it returns this, and this defines the problems. And first, the first field spectrum can set your set the twist gap, set the like, individual channels you want to fix, and you add the unitary spectrum at the end. And the rest, just to specify, this n group just get plugged in here. And the objective here, we're testing feasibility. And external dimensions are external dimensions from here, and finally goes here. And yeah, and the others are parameters, and don't need to worry about too much. So those are, they have a predefined default values in the Hyperion library. Only if you want to change things, you can go into the details of which fields you want to reassign.
Sorry, m lambda is the vector of OPE coefficients?
M lambda is the OPE coefficients, yes.
It's a maybe of OPE coefficients.
Yeah, it's a
maybe.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to set it, it can be nothing. That's why. Okay, so this is, yeah, so this is a function, right. So the big thing I just showed you is what enters here, and that defines your bound keys. And yeah, and so this is the entirety of this function. And when you want to do this, just to go back to your terminal, compile, and run this program. Okay.
Does the underscore mean anything in Haskell? I forget.
I don't think so. It's just, so originally there's a map concurrency function defined, and this is just like a small extension from it.
Yeah. There's a slightly annoying detail in Haskell where, because so many characters are not protected in any way, they're often used to indicate like slightly different versions of the same function.
Including prime.
Yep, prime is also used. Prime is a totally valid thing to use in the name of a function or something, which is great if you're a mathematician, but very confusing. Yeah,
you can do it in mathematics too if you enclose the prime with escape characters.
Oh no, okay. God, yeah. Let's not.
Good to know, not good to know. Okay, so this is another feasibility test. Difference is here we set a value to m lambda, but here it's just and following by a vector. So the four coefficients, OP coefficients, correspond to 0, 1, 1, 1. So it enters here, the rest. Exactly the same. Well, here, I put some. So this is a list of points that defined in another file. We have too many points we want to test, and we put it in a different file, but in the same directory. And yeah, that's a minor detail. Right. So those are two feasibility tests. This is the jump finding parameters. You can specify here whether you are doing just the usual SDB parameters without asking, without specifying you want the jumps. But if you type use the jump finding parameters here, then it will specifically run until you find the due jumps or find the primal jumps. Okay, and the next is again go and find this function. So let's just search for island and group 2 MX6. So this function runs Delaunay search, and the most important bit in this function is what I put in the box. So it's called a function called Delaunay search region persistent that's defined in the HappyMR library. And the following 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things are the arguments it's taking. And let's just go quickly through what they are. So Delaunay search points are just, we use a database to keep track of which points we have searched. So basically it's a key value map, and the key is a Delaunay search point, just a name of what we are saving here. And the values are on the points where we have searched and whether they are allowed or disallowed. Yeah.
Were you going to mention more about the database structure?
Later.
Later. Okay. Yeah.
And yeah, so that's just the list of points we have.
Eval map like a dictionary in Python.
Yeah. Identical.
And right, the next argument. Oh, this is really fitting. It's a Delaunay config and Delaunay config here. This line, just this line, and this line has two arguments you want to specify on two numbers. The first number is how many points you want to test at each Delaunay iteration or each Delaunay step. And the second number is the numbers of points you want to test in total. So this is just like each time we'll be looking at additionally 20 points to test, and they add up to 200. Like the job finish after finishing testing 200 points. Okay, and the initial points are the initial conditions for the de novo search, and then we need a set of initially allowed point and the initially disallowed point. The initially allowed point is really important, and the right. Okay, I'll mention it in a minute. But, okay, and the affine here is affine transformation. So yes, okay. So this is here. The affine transformation is defined in another file again. But essentially just a matrix. For this one, it's a 3x3 matrix. And so it's what it does is it transforms a cube into, how do I call this? It affine transforms a cube so that, so originally we'll be probing points inside of the cube, or more like inside of the sphere. But after affine transformations, we target our search space in a kind of prolonged and tilted region.
So this is useful when you get a really long.
Yes. Yeah. And so I said that the initial points, when we put the initial points here, the allowed regions are really important, but the disallowed points are like relatively less. It's just because in the program we have the endpoints, a boundary of your affine transformation is it's assumed that those points are disallowed. So even if you don't specify this part here, the denoted search can run. Okay, finally, the last bit, this little f here. So that little f is just a function we are running that's given the test, the points you want to test, and the return whether this point is allowed or disallowed. So this chunk of the function is very similar to what we had before when we wanted to test individual points. Okay, so that's de novo search. Next one, the OPE search. Okay, so OPE search, again, it's a function, it's this line in box that's most important. It's calling a function the remote gny. So this remote gny blah 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 OPE search is defined somewhere near the beginning of this file. And so that functions, it's calling some other OPE search functions defined in the Hyperion library. But so this function basically just it takes that it uses that routine and specify it to target it for the gny sigma psi epsilon model. And the arguments are the checkpoint map, lambda maps are defined here that they're just like keeping track, they're checkpoints that keeping track of the points you have scanned. And initial bilinear form is defined here. And what it is so this bilinear matrix defines the region in the OP space you want to scan. So it's kind of an ellipse. So see the binary for it define an ellipse, and this is the OPE space. And then when we cut, it's during the OP scan, it's cutting those regions.
So what are all these values that are inside? They're from some other run, presumably, but
these values you need to specify, and they correspond to what do they correspond to? So, for that example specifically,
Sorry. That matrix put in here, and it's greater than zero, I think.
So it's called the bounding ellipsoid, and it's the first bilinear form that you insert for the cutting surface of it. So it's the initial cut as to what subspace.
I see, so you don't want a bounding box, you want a more general shape.
Not a bounding ellipsoid in this case. And
yeah, it's a bound.
Is it easy to generate these? Like, how do I stop?
I'll show you how to do it in the actual examples. Like, those numbers we got from data we already have.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a high school or college linear algebra problem. So.
Yeah, and right. So that's the bilinear that matrix enters here to initialize this initial bilinear form set enters here. Okay, and there's some other parameters. So this is just a precision parameter, and the nothing is a shift of the like a vector shift of the ellipsoid. Here we just we didn't define anything, but we just had the matrix. And right, m lambda and the rest, the bound functions again, and the m lambda enters here. It's just the initial points here. Your initial OP points we're testing. Okay, so that's still very similar to what we had before, and it enters here again. So, right, so when we are doing OP search, what we need to include is, what we mainly need to include is here to specify which region we want to specify the region we want to search over. And finally, you can combine the DNA search with OP search together. And that's what this function is doing. So this function, I think I had the first screen, small screenshot, so there. Yeah. So this function here, it's defined in the same file again, and basically just put the DNA search and the OP search together. So not much new here. Okay, and the rest is similar. You put in your initial condition, initial points, the affine transformations, and the OPE ellipsoid. Okay. Yeah, and so those are the feasibility tests, and here it's an example of using the GFF navigator. The GFF navigator is explicitly defined in the bounds file. And here we just, instead of a feasibility, using the feasibility objective, we use the GFF navigator objective. And yeah, that needs to be changed. And the solver parameters, instead of using the feasible parameters or the junk parameters, we're using the optimization parameters. And that's it. Yep. So minimal changes here as well. And there's some function. What this function is doing, it's extremizing your navigator function using the BFGS algorithm. And this function is, it uses subroutines defined in the Hyperion library, and that is the SCP deriv remote BFGS bounds. Okay, and you can see the rest of the config in the file, and I hope they are self-explanatory. Those are relatively standard. You need to specify your bounding box and some other conditions.
I saw one that was BFGS safe. What was the difference with that one?
I don't remember.
In the documentation, it said about having a non-convex region.
Ah.
Oh, that's, yes, I know what that is.
Is that release or is it still experimental? Like, should I be using it?
This is something that Matt, who's a graduate student at Yale, implemented to resolve some issues that he was having in his thing. I would not like say that this is something that's like everyone should be using this. This is the new standard. There's a huge cost to it. It makes them much slower as a process. So you should not use it unless you're seeing something very strange go wrong.
Okay. So if I'm extremizing stuff and I get the number, I just stop and I.
So what's the issue with VLCs?
From the comments, it's probably non-convexity running off again.
I can talk to you about it later, Ning.
Okay, and now coming to actual run. You're not updating again. Sorry, give me 1 minute. I'm getting reconnected.
I think you should have disconnected.
Yeah, I'm doing that.
By the way, is the EFM implemented somewhere in Hyperion?
Yes, but it's in Matt's repository.
Okay.
I can show you where it is.
Okay.
And when you actually running it, you just go back to your terminal and type whatever you want to run. Here is a Delaunay search. And after you enter that, you get a message on no hop and appending your output to this file, which will appear in this local folder you're in. And you can open it, and it's kind of a log of the job. Yeah. You've launched so far, a log history. And the latest one will be the one that you just run. And if you open it and looking at that item, it tells you where, your job IDs and so on. And importantly, where your database is now at. And also where it also points you to a log file. So this is a master log, and it has a basic information of the job you just launched, like has it finished or not, or has it run into any errors. But if you want to look at the details of, either scalar blocks, either your blocks or like your solver details, you go into you go into that folder. The folder is named by your program ID. And each point will have one work log file. And so see, if I launch 5 points, then I get 0 log, 1 log, 2 log, and so on. So those are the log files if you want a quick check of the solvers and also your results. But when we are plotting things, we'll be using this database, SQLite database. Okay, and now I'll switch to Mathematica. So I've uploaded some Mathematica files to my GitLab, my repository, and this is an old file I had to plot. Sorry?
No, we just found out there is a way to extract the data because we were using some of your code, but it was not obvious how to get stuff out of the database.
Okay, yes.
Okay. There is an answer, okay.
So I think there are many versions of this file already. This is a really old version.
We don't have a centralized, this is a really old version. Okay, yes.
Yeah. So I had the codes to plot the affine transformations and the ellipsoid in this file. So those are the setup just to initialize a database functionalities. And a few things to read from the database. SQLite, and let me just first show you what the database looked like. Wow, which one? Hold on. So let's take a look at this. This is a Max 6. So it will correspond to the largest island I'm showing here.
By the way, does the extraction from the database require a specific version of Mathematica?
Yes, there's awful back-end issues with Mathematica where each version broke a different way of reading databases. So talk to me and I can give you the right thing. But you can also just use any like SQLite like reader that you want. You can, there's lots of them around. It's just none of them are known by physicists because we don't use these.
So those few lines I had to do when I moved to the new MacBook I had.
Yes.
And I had to download some files, some libraries to do it.
I think it's changed enough times that the old one works again. But yes.
Okay, so this is what the database looks like in the guild. And so you see, these are the Kiwi maps. It's the name of the Kiwi maps, and the keys to the values. So the keys.
Can you make it
bigger?
I think the only way to make it bigger is you have to go into the settings for DB browser and make the font bigger.
Oh great!
No. Go to DB browser. Preferences, data browser.
Change it?
Oh, that to change the other size. God. Data viewer, data browser.
Data browser. Here.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Aha. Okay.
Not in the navigator.
And this is still very small.
Oh.
But anyway, okay. So the name of like see each of the points is called the denoted search points, and the keys are the keys here. Those numbers give you the scaling dimensions of each of the three operators, and they are stored by storing the denominator and the numerator. So I think this is because we use rational for our scaling dimensions. So it's a split into numerator and denominator. And the values will tell you whether the point is allowed or disallowed. Okay. So for denoted search, it's those finish the points with a clear indication whether it's allowed or disallowed. Now, usually the point is still scanning, or at the end of job, some of the points that didn't finish because of maybe cluster issues or something else. Yeah, and the checkpoints, other things. Okay, and so that's what the database looks like in general. And the codes following those are to extract some of the information. So this function's get denoted search points will that extract the scaling dimensions for those points. And get binary forms should give us get binary forms is for OPE coefficients.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's ellipsoid. And yeah, those are just some function I defined to plot things, plot like the allowed and disallowed points separately. And there's also ways to extract the OPE coefficients. Yep.
Did you redefine what plot3D is?
It's lowercase d.
Ah. Oh, okay. I might suggest
Okay, you're fine.
Okay, and yeah, those things just to read the bounds.
That's
the details. Okay, and so here is a function that's, well, here's how I plotted three different islands corresponding to, so those three databases correspond to different Nmax, and they are Delaunay search plus OP scans results, and correspond to certain gaps, and I'm marked here. And yes, and that's just plotting them, and yeah, this function reads SQLite, reads some parameters, so you don't have to keep track of them separately. And okay, here,
how long does the computation take?
What computation?
Let's say lambda 35, that's Nmax.
Lambda 35,
so
Nmax is 18.
Yeah, the smallest one, how long does it take?
Oh, smallest one? Nmax 6?
Well, smallest island, you mean?
This is 14. I can't remember. Can you remember?
Yeah, so when in the paper, we had Nmax equals 18, lambda equals 35, and each point using literally 1,000 CPUs at a time took like a day.
Each point?
Yeah. Oh. It's 38 crossing equations, so it's a very...
Okay, and so here I show the way I calculated the affine transformation, and just use some mathematical functions to calculate the principal components and find the function finds geometric transform that to find the affine transformation. So let's see, I can just do cube, I think. Give me one moment. I forgot. What's the function? Geometric transformation. Okay, wrong order. I actually plotted them, part of them here. This region you see here is plotted by applying this affine transformation, it's Nmax 8 of affine transformation to the cube the cube between formed by the origin and 1, 1, 1. Okay, and so that gives us the region we want to do the Delaunay search over. And so the usual way we do this is we first run some points in lower Nmax, and use that data, those data points, to find a bounding box for it, and use that bounding box for a higher Nmax. Nmax 6 to find a bounding box for Nmax 8, Nmax 8 find a bounding box for Nmax 12. So that region sort of shrinks, but gives it enough space to search over. Yeah. So here it's using Nmax 6 to find the binding box for the smaller region. And next is from, actually we go, we went from 8 to 12, but here I'm showing you the 8 to 14. And so we use the binding box for Nmax 8 to for a search at Nmax 14. Okay. And so that's affine transformations for Delaunay search. And the next is the ellipsoid for the OPE search. Right, so again, you use this function to extract the OPE data, so all the points in OPE space, and then use the principal components functions to find the amplitude transformation. Here we'll be applying the affine transformations on a slightly bigger sphere. We take the sphere to be centered at 1/2, 1/2, 1/2 with a radius 2, so just to be safer, right? Instead of taking radius 1, we take a bigger region. Okay, and here is that sphere. So this region is the spheres after the affine transformation. And the green points are the actual OPE points, data points inside at a max 6.
How much does this speed it up compared to just naively taking a cube? Is it more than an order of magnitude or less?
I don't have an exact date.
I'll say that the islands you get without a good affine transformation are bad. You are often missing a lot of features of the island and
shape-wise,
yes, you're missing from
like what Neen showed before.
Exactly. You're wasting time in places where you don't need that much detail. And you're not spending enough time in places where you do need detail. And every time I've had a problem with a plot where something has gone awfully wrong, it's always, always, always been because I didn't have the affine transformation correct. So.
What if the island is like a C? The letter C.
Islands are like a C? I thought.
It's like curved.
Yeah.
If you can show me an island like that, I will. But.
But we did notice that at higher a max, shrinking it doesn't improve that much anymore. So it's more like from a max 6 to a max 12 or 14, it's really helps. But the higher it gets, it's not that important anymore.
That would be like a volcanic cauldron, right? There's plenty of those around New Zealand.
Shall we take our next mini course there?
Cauldron field theory. So maybe I can remark a bit on this. So this Hawking surface algorithm, when you actually use it, you should do affine transformation. The important thing is those are heuristics. It's not guaranteed to work. So you have to make your first evaluation as nice as possible in order for the heuristics to behave better.
Okay, and so the rest is just again applying it from going from 8 to 14, and then we get a smaller ellipsoid and finding a smaller region. Yeah. So that's just the code, some example codes how you extract the database and to get the affine transformations that you want. Okay, and so I think going from here, you can test your test the programs and try and see different ends for Owen group. Ooh. Sorry, it's trying different values for Owen groups, so trying different gaps and trying different configurations for the. For say denoised configurations or different affine transformations, and I hope this file can help you to extract the data out that you want to visualize. Okay. Yeah. And I think my tutorial ends here today.